J'ai l'honneur de co-présider cette séance avec Monsieur Omar Ali, secrétaire exécutif du comité multisectoriel de lutte contre le sida à Djibouti. Moi-même, je m'appelle Hapet Chekir, je suis le directeur du bureau arabe au Fonds des Nations Unies pour la population. Cette présentation se comporte de trois interventions que M. Omar Ali aura l'honneur de présenter. Il s'agit de M. Oussama Tawil, Mme Amel Qaraoui et Mme Noël Lahwal. Comme vous le savez, le problème du sida dans la région MENA et dans le monde arabe est très important. Malgré le fait que les pays de la région...
Nevertheless, the countries are perceived as countries where there's really a low prevalence of AIDS. Nevertheless, the statistics continue showing that the number of cases continue to increase, in spite of the fact that we don't have a developed system in the region. All information show an important transition between values, particularly when it comes to sexual and reproductive health. And this also shows that the population is information missing. They do not have the necessary amount of information concerning HIV and AIDS. In our country, risk factors are equally important. For example, I can certainly quote blood transmission, IUDs, unprotected sex, and mobility due to migration. It's also important to highlight that preventive programs are rather recent in their implementation. They're not generalized and certainly do not touch the vulnerable populations. We must note that the health system continues to be rather flimsy, and in order for us to provide a proper answer to this problem, we have to increase the level of work.
Que les interventions que vous allez écouter maintenant essaieront d'établir un profil.
I believe that the presentations that you will be listening to will try to describe the AIDS profile in the region, and they will be sharing with you the strategies that will allow them to consolidate the domestic response. I forgot to tell you, the presentations for this session will be English and French. Those of you wanting to hear the presentation in English will be in channel 6, French is channel 7, Spanish is channel 5. The presentations will also be taped. I turn the floor over to Monsieur Abdullah Miguel. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Co-Chair and Mr. Hafez Shakir. I am substituting the Health Minister, Abdullah Miguti, who could not attend this presentation because he missed his flight because of traffic conditions. Nevertheless, he wants to recommit his support to you. Furthermore, he did participate yesterday with the Global Village, and his words are of wanting to ask you to continue working on this subject. I will now turn the floor to our speakers. The speakers will be describing what the north and westerly part of Africa situation is. I'm asking everyone to actually speak their minds out so we can make strides in the region. I do want to thank the Director General and UNAID the opportunity to co-chair this meeting. The first paper will be given by Dr. Oussama Tawil. He's He's very well known in our region. He's the general director for UNAIDS in the region. He will be speaking about the epidemiological situation in our region. Furthermore, he will also tell us and remind us we can never stop fighting against HIV/AIDS. And I beg your pardon, I could not pronounce his name properly. Muy bien, la presentación.
I would just like to say, first of all, that this presentation is a follow-up of a presentation also that was done on the first day in a satellite conference entitled Know Your Epidemic, which was organized by several partners, including the World Bank, UNAIDS Secretariat, and WHO. There was a presentation that did a review of the current status of the epidemic as it's known now for the Middle East and North Africa region. Obviously, I have to say, because I'm doing a presentation that's covering 22 countries, that I stay a bit on the general level. I know that this doesn't apply to all the countries, and you can probably point out some of the differences when we get into the discussions, which I hope we'll have ample time to. It's already programmed that we should have at least half an hour of discussion in this session. So, first I must say, by starting to define the Middle East and North Africa region, everybody probably defines it in a different way, including different UN agencies and international partners, unfortunately. But for UNAIDS, the Middle East and North Africa, called in acronym MENA, is covering 22 countries, but I also would like to refer that some of these issues also cover the situation in Pakistan, although it's within UNAIDS, covered in the Asia context, but with WHO, it's covered in the same region. As an outline, I would like to focus on four areas. One is the socio-political context in MENA. Two is the HIV epidemic, trends and patterns. Three is snapshot of the response. Maybe it's because we don't have more than a snapshot, but anyway, in terms of the response in the region. And I would like to link that with some of the socio-culture and political issues, which you probably also will raise in the discussions and debates, and some of the main challenges and opportunities. How to define the region? I think just to characterize it and profile it a bit, it's still a vast region, although maybe not so highly represented in this conference. But just to note on the side that we've counted at least probably 11 or 12 countries who are represented in this out of the 22 in this conference. It covers 431 million people in 22 countries, excluding Pakistan, which would raise the total quite much higher up. But what is important to note is what is always said about the region is one-third of the population is below 15 years old. And that obviously has consequences in terms of how we program and look at the priorities in terms of prevention. Gender differences are still considerable in this region. There is probably some indicators, positive indicators in the 80s and 90s, and in this decade in terms of education, work opportunities and public life, but still, if you look at the situation, number of countries, the differences between men and women in terms of access to education, and even if you take the example of Gulf countries where they have high access to education but low access to work opportunities, and of course a much more limited role in terms of public life, there are some breakthroughs, but still generally it's important to note this aspect when we also talk about vulnerabilities and risks. Diverse development indicators show that we are talking about a very diverse region. If you look at life expectancy, it varies from 43 years to 79 years of age. Very important to note is the contrasting economic situation. We have the stereotype of this region probably as being the Gulf countries only or being oil rich. The situation is not as such. We have low income countries, we have middle income countries, and we have high income countries, and they're pretty much well divided among these 22. What's important to note also when we talk about resource mobilization, and opportunities is that out of those 22 countries, 14 are entitled to global fund because they are either in the low or low middle income category. What is very important to note is that we are a country that, although we don't have the highest visibility in terms nor the aid situation or the response, we always have the highest visibility in terms of the conflicts in this region, political instability and security. So most of the developmental gains we're talking about are continuously questioned by conflicts and wars that span Afghanistan, Iraq, Sudan, Somalia, the Palestinian territories, sometimes Lebanon, and other contexts as well. And this is quite important to note because I think this would be one of the issues we need to talk about in terms of the impact also of the political situations on policies and on HIV/AIDS programs. If I'm to summarize the situation in terms of the epidemic, what we say basically is there's no single HIV epidemic in the region. It's quite diverse. When in the global report that has been shared in this conference, we're talking an estimated prevalence of 0.3 in the general population. But when we look at it in detail, it can be very much under 0.01% prevalence to up to close to 3% prevalence. If we use the categories that are generally used globally, we talk about low prevalence countries, countries in a concentrated epidemic phase, in particular concerning injecting drug users, but also potentially other populations as well, and a generalized epidemic phase. I know these categories are not satisfactory, and there's, in a sense, overlap between them that we're noting on the ground, which begs the question to need to sort of develop a better understanding of the categories in terms of HIV prevalence. The 2007 report estimates 40,000 new infections in the region, and in terms of the diverse epidemic situation, what we should note is that sexual transmission is the main mode we're talking about. The drug injecting related transmission is very important in a number of countries. Of course, Iran, and here I don't mention, but again, as I said, definitely Pakistan, Libya, and Afghanistan. These are variations also in terms of diversity within the countries. And although we still talk about most infections and cases being reported among men, there's an increase in terms of ratio among women, and we're likely to see, and we're already seeing, more in terms of mother-to-child transmission. I mentioned the diversity of the epidemic, but this diversity is also within countries, indicating that we might have different, whether we talk about Morocco or Algeria or Sudan, even smaller countries like Djibouti shows diversity in terms of the different regions of the country, which means that we might be looking at different risk and vulnerability factors. But definitely what we find where the data exists, and here when I talked about in the introduction that there's learning from the facts, we obviously have a gap in the information that exists. Hafid already mentioned in terms of second generation surveillance, we're far from where we should be, and we're basing a lot of these conclusions on what data exists. But where we have the data and indicators in terms of behavioral data also, we see that the focus should be on most at-risk populations. We note low levels of condom use and prevention in terms of sex workers and limited availability and access to prevention services in general. And obviously, as has been said several times and mirrored throughout this conference, I don't think this region is much different in terms of the focus that we should be doing on men who have sex with men. I just quote small studies here, but they are significant in terms of the prevalence that we are finding where we thought there was no prevalence among men who have sex with men, including in Egypt and in Sudan. There is evidence, as in sort of the Asia profile or other regional profiles, of overlap of risk between different patterns of sexual transmission, and a very strong also overlap between IDU and sexual transmission. So more and more, I think we'll look at evidence, we'll see evidence of emergence of concentrated epidemics among specific populations and settings in the Middle East and North Africa. Other aspects of vulnerability that we should focus on, and which I think most of the public health actors agree on, and even meaning the governments, is changing norms of behavior among younger people and in the recent generations. We talk about prison settings and the high risk behavior documented there, and the different factors of mobility and migration, whether within the region, between countries, or between regions. And here, particularly, mobility has been a focus in some of the sub-regions of the Middle East and North Africa, in particular North Africa itself, but also around the Red Sea and the Horn of Africa and Gulf countries, with migrant labor within the region and from outside the region. And obviously, we've mentioned socioeconomic and gender disparities. An example of the levels of risk, even when we don't have prevalence data of HIV, on HIV among injecting drug users, we see a very high rate of levels of needle sharing in surveys conducted over the last few years. And here, as I mentioned, the overlap of risk that is noted in the data that is available to us. I would like to talk about now opportunities in terms of the response. And here, I don't want to be describing the response as being something to be proud of, nor as something to be completely not proud of, in the sense of what efforts have been done. I think there has been some progress, but obviously there are big gaps that we should note, and we should discuss why these gaps are and what needs to be done. And here I've made an effort, which I know is a bit tricky, to profile the countries in terms of the response, taking into account the epidemiological factors and the response factors between the different countries. And I know if you have strong feelings of difference of opinion with us, it's just to say that these categories are basically overlapping and you see a shift in terms of time. But where the HIV epidemic is visible in terms of seeing a number of cases developing, or in terms of the epidemic developing, we see that we recognize that HIV has been taken within the national priorities, and they have embraced the universal access in terms of access to those in need of HIV prevention, care, treatment, and support. And these countries I mentioned are like include Algeria, Djibouti, Morocco, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. And it's related, again, to some of the social and political issues that have been identified. And I know we have a lot to discuss even about Iran, but I just wanted to point out, because the issue of HIV has mirrored another concern, a social and political concern around drug use and drug cultivation, drug trafficking affecting the sub-region, which has partly mobilized the authorities and the NGO partners in Iran to give a particular focus on injecting drug use in the community and also in the prison context. More adapted to this, the context of the region, taking into account low prevalence and more limited visibility, are countries that may not prioritize this issue as the highest issue, but have developed programmatic responses focusing on most at-risk populations and focusing on people living with HIV. We come to the third category, which is the quite challenging one, and again, I don't intend to put countries in one category or not, but where the stage of the response is facing political constraints in terms of how AIDS is dealt with and how AIDS is positioned. AIDS brings up a number of sensitive issues, like sexual behavior, like men who have sex with men, like injecting drug use, and all of you know, and it has also been mentioned in the conference, the incidents that have happened, the waves of arrest that took place with men who have sex with men late last year and earlier this year in Egypt. And here again, I am saying that in Egypt there is an important programmatic response, but unfortunately some of the political challenges we face as well. Iran is another example, just to mention the recent arrest of two actors in terms of the HIV response that happened in late June and which has been brought to the international attention. Lastly is the issues of the security and post-conflict context countries, where there we don't know really the impact and where we have vast challenges. And I mentioned the countries, and some of these countries, such as Afghanistan and Iraq, there is an effort, and the Palestinian territories, to address this issue. I have 2 minutes, so I'll just try to say some things which are very fast. I think in terms of the challenges, in terms of prevention, the focus has been more and more on most at-risk populations. But this work is only beginning and is far from going forward. But I'd like in the presentations afterwards from Amal to get a glimpse of the type of programmatic approaches on sex work. Treatment, care and support, although there has been initiatives by many of the governments to provide free access to care, to treatment, there is essentially a big gap in terms of the 7% coverage of those in need of services. A positive sign is, I mentioned, that 14 countries have possible access to global fund resources and meet the criteria. In the last 3 or 4 years, we have seen $431 million being channeled in terms of the AIDS response in this region. This may be nothing in comparing to some of the other regions, but in comparing to what we had before, definitely something moving forward. Services are there, mostly through the support of the Global Fund, but far underutilized, and access still remains very limited. And there's substantial movement forward by the associations and support groups of people living with HIV and civil society, which also Nawal will speak of. Here is just an example of also moving forward in terms of sex work programs, starting from some initial pilot initiatives and lessons learned from Morocco and Lebanon, and trying to adapt that in other countries of the region. I won't go into detail on this. I'd like just to situate as a closing in terms of three challenges. In terms of reaching, scaling up towards universal access, political commitment, the issues of stigma and discrimination, including in particular for most at-risk populations, such as men who have sex with men and sex work, and scaling up the response. I'd just like to conclude with a picture to note the diversity of the situation in this region. Thank you very much.
Merci, Oussama. Donc, sans plus tarder, je pense que les questions, c'est après les présentations. Donc, on va, comme on dit, apurer les trois présentations. Je vais passer donc à la présentation suivante, qui va se focaliser sur les actions de prévention face au VIH pour ceux et celles qui en ont besoin, le plus besoin.
Et les perspectives para la gente que más las necesita. Y hablaremos también de las perspectivas en el terreno. La persona que va a hablar es Amal El Arawi, que es de Marruecos, que es alguien que trabaja en el terreno, que trabaja con los grupos vulnerables, trabaja con UNICEF, con ONUCIDA, con Médicos Sin Fronteras, con los programas nacionales de lucha contra el SIDA en los países de la región. Trabaja en Marruecos, Túnez, Egipto, Omán,
Egipto.
Entonces le doy 5 minutos.
Good afternoon. Today I will try to present some of our experiences in the field work, which is a proximity approach in the Middle East and North of Africa. And we will speak about the orientation for the future. In the Middle East and North of Africa, or MENA region, homosexuality and sex work are part of the four hidden issues. If I ask you, do you have homosexuals in your region? Do you have sex workers in the region? Of course everybody has, also in our country, but the religious and cultural context does not allow us to get in touch with the MSM or to the sex workers. I'm too short, I can't see the screen, and I have a sort of messed up in my papers here. Just a second. We have broken the silence thanks to the proximity approach and the community participation. I will tell you which are the vulnerability factors, as I said before. We do have sex workers in our region, and we also have homosexuals in our region. Like in any other place in the world, but our context is a little bit different, and the vulnerability factor, therefore, are also different. If I talk about vulnerability sector, the first one would be silence. Sexual relations do exist, but no one wants to talk about them. We have also a very ambiguous legislation. We do have a legislation, but it's ambiguous. We have laws which could be implemented, but they're also ambiguous for the vulnerable population. Stigmatization and marginalization are other factors of vulnerability. The limited access to information and means of privation, limited access to health services, social services, and legal services. Now we are talking about the sexual worker. They have little perspective of having a better life. And that has to do with the socioeconomic and political context. Another risk factor would be the exposition linked to their lifestyle and particularly to the risky practices. Key strategies. In fact, we tried in the MENA region to apply certain strategies, particularly those that I'm going to mention now. Everything continues to be difficult, but at least we could start with the proximity work and key strategies. First, we have multi-sectorial partnerships with the participation of the Ministry of the Interior, the Ministry of Health, NGOs, and private sector. We have to have clear and favorable policies. We also need programs with multiple elements. And here I'm going to speak about the sex workers, men and women. And for them, the multi-component program is quite important. We need to promote safe sexual practices. We have to promote health services. And we also have to advocate in favor of respect to human rights. Before talking about the challenges we have on the field, I'd like to explain the context where the challenges has been overcome little by little in Morocco, Algeria, Egypt, Oman, and Sudan. Why did we choose those countries? Well, I'm going to mention three examples. I will speak about Oman, Algeria, and Sudan, so you can see the context and the experiences that we have in all three countries in relation to other experiences in the region. This is Oman. Before talking about the sex workers in Oman, I would like to mention that it is very important to analyze the situation. And that was done with a national plan of the fight against HIV in Oman. After analyzing the situation, we have had several interventions, and we are going to explain which is the intervention for sex workers. The Sultanate of Oman, has a situation of the sex worker which is different from the different nationality. We have original from Oman, from Philippines, from Lebanon, from Thailand. A lot of Chinese women too are sex workers. All of these people work in the clandestinity. When I speak about the situation of sex workers in Oman, I have to make the difference between the nationals and the foreigners. For the national, it's quite difficult because Oman is a small country where everybody knows everyone. So, on the other hand, the Oman national sex workers have to be hidden. Now, the foreigners could be working in clubs, in bars, in the massage parlors too. This population, this group of sex workers, has a limited access to information or to social and judicial services. They are subject to exclusion and marginalization. And when I speak about that, I cover all of this, and no matter the nationality, but even for the nationals, everybody knows everyone, and sex workers are well known, and they are excluded, and they are marginalized, both nationals and foreigners. In relation to the men having sex with other men, MSM, this is a sexual practice which is marked by a big silence. There is a limited access to the information and to health services, social services, and legal services. There is also a stigmatization and marginalization. There is a mobility because they have to work underground, and this MSM has very little access to health care, and they cannot tell their situation to the doctor. They cannot admit that they have sex with other men. And in any case, they don't want to see a doctor, and they don't want to see to go to a hospital, even if it is a private hospital. No, but this is something for reflect and for orientation. The approach of proximity in terms of intervention strategy and the direct link with the proper services has allowed us to have some reflection with the people that work on the field. The idea is to approach the groups and interested in the situation, and to imply them at the level of conception and the implementation of programs that affect them. So it was important to work within that population in order to apply the proximity approach. This is very important in the debate and in the reflection. It's important to explain to the community which is the program, which is the implementation, and which is the follow-up of the program. In Oman, the constitution of Oman is against the sociocultural context of the country. This is a very important challenge. When I talk about the sex workers and I say that we have Chinese, Thai, Moroccan, and from Lebanon, the proximity approach has to be different for each group. It has to be a different approach for each nationality. I will speak about the challenges in the region, and in this case, I would take the case of Algeria. The Algerian context has done the space to a position in relation to the program of prevention in favor of sexual workers and MSM. after several surveys. When I speak about this position, we need an association at the level of the national program, NGOs, international organizations, in order to give a proper response to the problems affecting this group. So we have had certain surveys done in depth in order to find more data in Algeria. The implication of the communities for the reflection, the implementation, and the decision making about the programs that will respond to the needs of the groups of this groups that are involved in this problem. The proximity approach that was initiated in Algeria will guarantee the link between the population and the different services, and this is also in Oman. Sometimes the sex workers and the MSM has to be the approaches for them have to exceed the limits of the capital city. This picture is a session for information of resources available. This is after the program for training by peers. I want to give you an idea of which are the challenges in Sudan. The proximity approach for the sex workers has very important challenges. The situation is a little bit different. The idea of the main activity is ladies that sell tea and coffee on the street, and after the tea, after the coffee that they sold, they offer also a sexual relationship. We call them occasional sex workers, but also we have a professional sex workers. When we speak about the Sudan context, we know that it's very difficult, but it's feasible to have policies and to have some outreach to people that have direct access to the population. In this picture, you can see a session for the formation, for the training of outreach workers that can provide peer training in order to involve people in the program. This is a peer training where we where they have many women, most of them sex workers, which come from different parts of the country to receive this peer training. Before talking about the specific challenges, I will give you several examples that we have to mention, because the examples are different depending on the context, and most of the contexts are very complex. We could go to the field work, we could get in touch with the groups, but there's a lot of silence about this activity, and we have to find the proper compromise between keeping the silence and respecting the silence and trying to convince them to be part of the program. We can speak about the keys on the field. These are the person that we can find everywhere in Morocco, Sudan, Lebanon, Egypt. These are people that go to Oman and they have a direct confrontation and they mingle between the population, but these are the ones who are more concerned about getting the proper services. They want to have information on the field by means of a proximity approach, and through this work and their experience, the groups, the target groups, can give a different orientation to the intervention. It's very important to, please, a round of applause for these activities. All the people that you see here, they come from Morocco, from Algeria, Sudan, Oman, Egypt, Tunisia. Before going to the conclusions, I say that these key features of the field are very important, and that's why I would like to give homage to these people. As a conclusion, the demand, supposes the offer, and the sexual relationship exist also in the region of Middle East and North of Africa. The sexuality is still taboo, but thanks to the proximity approach, we were able to break the silence and to take a position. And this is in every country that I have mentioned. Of course, this approach has a certain caveat. We need a clear methodological framework, and we have direct contact with the involved population. The proximity approach should be based on listening to the needs and to have a link with the services, but have to be proper services. Now, we still have some questions. Of course, we have had some experiences which is remarkable for the population in risk, but we still have some interrogation. The proximity approach is going to be done by whom? First question, the civil society, or the first the civil society, and then that will be get in touch with the groups involved, and then the group should become an actor of the action, then it will be owning the action. And which is the role of the civil society for that community? Which is the position of the community, because they also will have ownership of the work, or they have to share the experience in the region and the rest of the world. Which are the next steps? In relation to the next steps, I have to be fast and I have not much time, but in relation to the next steps, we have to consider an immediate perspective and then in the near future. First, we will see which are the immediate perspective. I have mentioned in the first place the field intervention, the key people in the field. It's important to ensure the motivation and the reinforcement of the capacity of the actors on the field. We can use the proximity approach, yes, but it has to be specific for the different groups and different subgroups. I have mentioned that because if you are going to discuss with the Chinese or the Thai or the Moroccan, the message will be different, the language will be different, and the type of approach is different. We have also to ensure the quality of services by means of a constant follow-up system. We need also quality in the follow-up. We have to apply more and more the communities in the process of reflection, conception, implementation, and follow-up of a program. It's important to have the communities acquire a certain ownership of the programs in order to have better services and to end up in appropriate policies. We want to approach that population, but sometimes the policies does not help us. I think there's a social the civil society and the government, they have to work together. Otherwise, it cannot have success. Thank you very much. Shukran.
Merci, Naval.
Thank you. I understand the emotion when you talk about the workers on the field, the key people, the partnership about different people, the MSMs, the social workers, and the questions that we still have to answer. The last presentation will be Nawel Lawel from Algeria. The talk will be part of the solution people living with HIV engaged as key actors to achieve universal access in the Middle East and North of Africa. I will call her a warrior against AIDS. So I gave her the floor. Good morning, good afternoon rather. I'm Nawel Lawel. I work with the Algerian Association representing people living with AIDS. And I want to apologize if I speak about some histories of other regions that do not involve the country that you might be interested, but in the MENA region, which is Middle East and North of Africa, it will comprise Algeria, Djibouti, and Lebanon. The leadership and the visibility of the people living with AIDS in the MENA region is an example of Algeria, Djibouti, Lebanon, Sudan. After 1998, the participation has had several meetings and in different countries and in the region after 2001. I want to mention the declaration of Algeria in November 2005. That was the first regional workshop of people living with HIV in 15 countries of the region. This is the result of a long process of exchange of information, and therefore we could adopt the regional declaration based on the common priority needs. You can find it in the stand in the right here outside this room. So we have prepared a framework of reference that we have prepared for and by people living with VIH, despite the differences in languages and culture. We have done several things. Maybe they are not still enough, but we could establish some communication about the people living with the VIH in Morocco, Tunisia, Yemen, Iran, Libya, and Jordan. We have a group of people that support the movement of people living with VIH. After the Algeria declaration, we decided to get together in May 2008 in Tunisia in our 10th regional meeting. The advance achieved after the declaration of Algeria was quite remarkable. We did many things in favor of the universal access. In treatment, we gave access to an important number of people living VIH with a better coverage. We have better quality of observance. We have a biological follow-up, always centralized. We also provide psychosocial support, and we have the initiative of certain activities that give birth to income, but this is not, or the income generated is not enough. But we also have some activities in prevention. We have the participation of people living with VIH for the promotion of the triage and the screening. Now, what else do we have to do? Well, we need a more national response, and therefore we need more coordination. We want to apply and to implement and enforce the existing laws. We want support to the fight against stigmatization and decriminalization. And we want to support technical aid in order to guarantee the universal and free access. We work also with the governments and other partners in order to ensure the universal access to prevention, treatment, support, and psychosocial counseling. We need to develop individual and collective action. We want to fight stigmatization and decriminalization. We want to mobilize the resources, including the exchange of medication by people living with HIV. We want to cooperate with the religious leaders and other actors in order to fight disinformation. For example, the Minister of Religious Affairs in Iran is collaborating with the High Association. There are some pictures here. This is in preparation of the workshop for training. I would like to say that I will thank to the people of Global Vision for their visibility, because some of them are part of our region and of our organization, and I'm so glad that they give the visibility to the MENA region, and I expect that change will come to our region and we could live a good life like the rest of the world. Thank you.
Merci Nawal, merci beaucoup. Donc, tout en continuant comme Nawal vient de le faire.
Nawal, muchas gracias a los demás. Además, tenemos de parte de las organizaciones y el grupo civil, continuaremos con lo que es la diversidad y la capacidad de respuesta del sector. And the World Bank trying
éminente, notamment pour la prise en charge.
And we have several eminent people, especially we have the participation from Amal Karoui from Morocco and another personality from the Lebanon who have helped the attention in our country to reach the level that it needs to have, although much remains to be done. And now I turn the chairmanship over to my colleague, to the regional director from FINAB, so he can give us the conclusions and open the floor to the questions and answers. Thank you very much. I do want to thank the speakers for the presentation. They gave us the rather complicated frameworks. These are frameworks that are certain rather trailblazing in the area. They have helped us mobilize the civil society and have also helped us mobilize the principles groups, as well as allowed us to establish the political alliances and the alliances needed with the social actors so we can implement the programs and the implementations. Programs, what they did was make obvious what the needs are that we still have to work with. We need to begin gathering data in order to promote and help the decision makers so their focus and are a lot more global concerning the national responses in relationship to HIV, so they can begin to incorporate their programs within legislation. We also need programs that will allow us to act rather quickly with in favor of the groups that are at risk, especially with MSMs and sex workers. And through the three presentations, we heard three different axes. Number one, how can we improve the prevention programs in our region? because prevention is very, very important. How can we improve so we can begin working with the less favored categories, such as, once again, sex workers and MSMs? The next point that I picked up as important, how to reinforce the health systems as well as the national health response systems to help reach the Millennium Goals, especially and with every category in the population, whether these are pregnant women or these are people who are sick, so we can begin reducing mother-to-child transmission. The third item that I picked up was that this point of view has to be centered on human rights, because on account of the current social and political conditions, we need an adhesive social framework and refocus law in favor of human rights for men, human rights for women, human rights for people. This is the associative network, and we can work this through the networks of people living with HIV. I believe this is the time to open the floor, and anyone wishing to pose questions, we will ask you to stand up to the microphone. And maybe you can help us issue the proper recommendations, and now you have the floor. But you do need to walk over to the microphone, please. Dinos, might you have a wireless? Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I come from the association in Lebanon. I do want to congratulate you for the extraordinary work that you're doing in the Arabian countries. But before, I do want to ask you, there's several groups that have been condemned to death, especially in the MENA region. And in this context, messages such as save your life, use a condom is rather ironic, because MSMs are condemned, are punishable by death. On the other hand, they are criminalized, criminalized. There's a flagrant violation to human rights, and people are in prison. In a context like that, how can we do any follow-up studies on MSMs? Because in Lebanon, in spite of the programs that we have to fight AIDS, there really is difficulties in convincing MSMs to go to clinics and to visit the necessary clinics to receive treatments. How can we help change laws in the MENA areas, and how can we begin to make the networks known? And I'm sure these networks will soon be targeted by the government. So how can we help MSMs to begin to use the services in a political context as the one as I just described?
PhD student at Karolinska Institute, Stockholm, and working now in South Africa. My question is regarding the conflict situation, specifically to Dr. Tawil. We know from two sources, Dr. Mokhbat in 99, he did nicely map the diversity of the HIV in Lebanon. And in 2005, I was working in South Sudan, and also we know from the returnees to Sudan, they come from different countries where there are different HIV subtypes. And I wonder if there is any strategic plan to map returnees to the countries where there used to be conflict in the MENA area, because this will have clinical significance for them when they start treatment. Thank you.
Le monsieur en rouge. It's preferable if they come here. Si vous pouvez venir ici. On nous demande, les organisateurs nous demandent si ceux qui veulent.
The organizers are asking to please stand next to the microphone so you can appear in the camera.
From Morocco, my question is for Mrs. Qarawi. Amel, I wanted first to thank you for this very interesting presentation. And I wanted to know, as HIV testing and counseling is not only part of any HIV prevention program, but also the entry point to all key interventions. I wanted to know what was the, starting from your field experience, what was the approach adopted in your outreach prevention programs? Tu veux que je traduise, Amel? C'est bon? Alors, donc j'ai remercié...
En ce qui concerne le test et conseil VIH, quelle était l'approche qu'elle, partant de son expérience sur le terrain, quelle était l'approche qu'elle adoptait dans ses programmes de prévention de proximité?
Marco de sus, de l'enfoque de proximidad.
My name is Mabel Chavi, and...
Dans une de la population. Les présentations ont parlé des personnes à haut risque, les MSM et les travailleurs.
In the presentation, you spoke about the risk groups. You mentioned the sex workers, and you spoke about the MSMs. First, we were told that 1/3 of the people in the population are less than 15 years of age, and I know there's another portion that are between 15 and 24 years of age, and. I heard the presenters speak about behavioral modification, but we haven't even spoken about the youngsters in the MENA region, and neither have we spoken about the youth participation in decision-making. I believe that youngsters are really not incorporated nor given a rather significant role to play. When it comes to improving prevention, the youth participation will definitely be a factor to improve prevention. My name is Nadia Badram. I am the person in charge of the AIDS project in Lebanon. As part of the AIDS project, we do have a proximity work issue, similar to what you mentioned with the sex workers. We also approach people who inject narcotics or drugs. I know that in some of the countries in the MENA region, people don't always have an access to the global fund. This is the case for the country of Lebanon. So what would the United Nations agencies wish to do? What kind of associations or partnerships will you be undertaking with us in order to target the proximity type of work and long term? The problem is that sometimes we begin working, we're able to carry out the work for 1 year, a year and a half, and then the project sadly is abandoned. Therefore, long term, what perspective do these programs have, and especially those countries that do not have an access to the global fund? Thank you. My name is Amina Shakar, and I am the coordinator of UNAID in Mali. I've been working in Western Africa for 10 years, and there's several comments I'd like to share. These are comments and not questions. I want to begin by congratulating the speakers. They were very good presentations. I've always admired community work and the proximity type of approach. Yet I still have several comments in relationship to recent programs. There are very, very old programs in place, for example, in Algiers, in Morocco. And I believe it would be worth emphasizing those issues that would improve the health in the region. Number one, we need to integrate reproductive health services. This is a tool that we need to begin using. And we need, number two, we need to decentralize activities. Number three, we need to use the health sector services because some of the health sectors are quite developed in our regions. And finally, I would like to second the words from the previous speaker. We need to get close to all of the youngsters, not only to those youngsters who are at risk. We have a whole infrastructure in place that we can begin using. So I just to conclude, we can use these sectors, health development region networks, which are in place. Yes, my name is Sia Trukashisak. I'm from Tunisia, and I'm studying in the University of Washington in the city of Seattle. My comment is related to women, to the women in the Middle Eastern and Northern Africa region. I know I've often heard about many activists, but I'd like to talk about married women. We met married women who married at a very young age, and they marry men who suddenly have sex with other men or inject intravenously. And I'd like to draw the attention to people drafting policies in the region so they can at least look into what is happening, because this is a group that's extremely vulnerable and they do deserve special attention. And good afternoon. My name is Etman Melut. I come from Morocco's ICF, and I would like to thank these speakers for their presentations and congratulate Nawal for the power that she has and for the courage of speaking up front. That is the first association that was created for people that live with HIV, and I do hope that Nawela can continue with the presentation.
Le vrai problème, c'est qu'il y a vraiment ce fatalisme. Je ne sais pas si c'est le.
I believe that the problem in the region is that there's this. I don't know. People are rather fatalists. I don't know if this is part of the region or the culture. You know, we'll say like, oh yeah, there's some prevention programs. Okay. But these are rather specific programs, and they're not long-lasting. We can never say that a sex worker in Morocco has an access to HIV testing or access to any other form of medical prevention. So what can we do in order to have the proper types of programs in Beirut, in Casablanca, and any other countries, so MSMs and sex workers can have the proper access to these services? Only 7% of the people have an access to treatment, which is, and only 1% of the population can access the mother-to-child prevention treatment. This is really a disaster program. It's a disaster. We need to question yourself. There are people. Well, we have to ask people to be accountable, because it's not always society that will stigmatize and discriminate. The responsibility comes from the government itself, because we do have laws that are stigmatizing as well. Unfortunately, we don't have any governments here. Yet the United Nations must also be accountable. UNAID and the WHO need to reply and be accountable and say, why are you not doing anything in our region? I'm not blaming them specifically, but they are part of the problem. And I'm under the impression that we're certainly not going forward. We haven't gained anything. We're living in a rather unsatisfactory situation, and we have done so for a very long time. I believe it's time. It's time to ask our governments to be accountable. We need to ask international institutions to be accountable as well. I will be turning the floor over to the speaker since we have a few minutes left. And I turn the floor over to Osama.
I would like to say, first of all, that the issues you're raising, which are extremely important and to the point, are the answers that should be given by the governments, by you, by the civil society partners, and by the UN and other international partners. Again, I'm not playing, passing the ball around. I think what we have been trying to do is create a platform for NGOs to come together and to lift their capacity in terms of resource mobilization capacity for the people living with HIV, for having a dialogue with the government actors, and, you know, other sectors and other international partners. So I think, you know, this is one thing we should note. What can the UN do, and what can UNAIDS with a few persons do, except sort of create a platform, an environment for the solution which is going to come from the countries, in the countries and in the communities concerned and the populations concerned. That's what the way we see it in terms of moving forward. Nevertheless, I mean, and that's why I would like to say, I mean, there are here governments which are in this room as well, and there are the UN, different UN agencies who support this, actions that they should also speak up to these questions. I'd like to point out starting with the most difficult issue, which is probably what George posed, is that what do we do in an environment which is completely repressive with regards to men who have sex with men, but also can be in the context of sex work or migrants, or sometimes even in the context of drug users or injecting drug users. And I don't think we have a sufficient response for that. A programmatic response that we are trying to start activities where we can doesn't suffice without a dialogue with the governments on the policies and the discriminatory practices that are involved. I would like to cite the example of Egypt, and I would cite that a question that we put to ourselves, UNAIDS, what's in our role, UNAIDS, for example, and representing UNAIDS, the family, the other UN agencies, when the government takes a decision to arrest a number of people, partly because they're men who have sex with men, partly because of their HIV status. And we have continued to have this dialogue with the Ministry of Health in Egypt, with the other sectors of the government concerned, including when we could have the contact with the ministers to influence the situation. We've worked with a human rights group in Egypt and on the Human Rights Watch on this issue, because they're partners in this. And we have tried to do what we can in terms of improving the conditions of those who were imprisoned and who were basically put in quite bad conditions and not having access to treatment. We've tried to ensure access to treatment, and we've tried to ensure the better conditions, which partly because of this advocacy that some of you have joined in has brought about a bit of change, but we are not there yet, because that could re-happen again. There is a policy dialogue that needs to be done with the governments, and we have to examine what role to do that. If you have any strong opinions on how we should go forward in this, and maybe I should ask that what we have been doing in the question of MSM, we mentioned the issue of Sultanate of Oman, we've mentioned the issue of, there are other countries which have moved forward on some of these issues, like Tunisia and so forth. We have tried to work where the environment was possible and where we could, to the authorities concerned, bring out the issue of the importance of men who have sex with men, the need for prevention and so forth. We're at the beginning of the road, and I do agree with you that if we do not challenge and talk openly with the governments about policy issues, I'm not sure how far we can succeed. But I also leave it to the governments here who have different contexts and examples to see how they have dealt with this issue. As far as young people is concerned, I mean, I would, I think there is this focus on young people, and here maybe I would address that question to our colleagues from UNFPA and UNICEF and the governments as well, and the actors in terms of what's being done on young people. I didn't mention enough in terms of that aspect. In terms of internally displaced and conflict situation in Sudan, also in terms of the mobilization of resources in very difficult circumstances in the Palestinian territories in Somalia, we have worked with the Global Fund and different partners to mobilize resources for those populations, including the internally displaced populations, and that's a priority for the Sudanese program. That is also a priority in terms of for Somalia, if I can cite those examples. I think the Global Fund issue, maybe I'll put it back on the Global Fund in a sense, because this is the challenge of our, it's the same as what the Latin American countries have been saying, of the high middle income countries. Lebanon is an example, but there are others which could benefit from this support. In terms of the issue of access to treatment, I mean, Othman basically said a strong statement about where we're at and the accountabilities for that. I think, I mean, this is a fair judgment. We look at things in terms of how they have developed. Now, if you look at treatment, one of the credits that goes to many of the governments of this region is that those who have had the resources have put, have tried to provide access to treatment, have provided free of charge. The whole problem is to how many are they providing services to account for the 7% figure we have. And what accounts for us bridging that gap, and there's no excuse that within 1 or 2 years it's not 17 or 27 or 37%. And I think this is where we have to make the difference. I think one of the problems is in terms, not only in terms of access to treatment, but it's access to voluntary counseling and testing services and outreach programs and so forth to link up these services. In other words, we're providing treatment, and some countries can claim for the cases they know they're providing over 80% treatment to them, but there are probably a few thousand more unknown. And this has to be bridged somehow programmatically. The Global Fund resources provides us that opportunity to do that. Otherwise, maybe Gabriel could say a word also on bridging that gap in terms of access to treatment. I don't want to take the floor because there's a lot of other questions, but I give it a half it to whoever would want to contribute to answering this.
Probablement, on attend. Je donne la parole à Amel pour qu'on puisse. Et je donne ou bien.
Je vous remercie. Muchas gracias. Je voulais répondre à
for your debate. And I'd like to speak about the debate of men having sex with men. It's within a very specific social cultural context. It's been very, very difficult to allow these people to have the appropriate access to the services. I do believe it's important. It's important. The experiences that we have lived are important in the region, so we can continue working with the groups at risk. We need to continue working with the multisectorial probabilities, and the proximity type of treatment is essential. We see sometimes, for example, in Lebanon, we can have demonstrations on the street. The workers that do work out in the field, that are the link between the vulnerable groups and the quality services. And we cannot be working alone. We need, we have to have the motivation from the whole world. We cannot be doing things alone. And the people that the services that are being donated are broader services, and we need to multiply the associations with other NGOs. This is what will strengthen us, and this is what will make our voices heard even better in advocacy. Dr. Kinkuri, you spoke about testing. about HIV testing. I believe that the proximity type of work will fail if it's not related to quality services. And when I would like to emphasize the word quality, because, for example, with sex workers having a test and using a condom are not the only two important issues. Our research proved that we need to overcome the legal barriers before we can begin solving the health problems. And yes, of course, we do undertake the HIV testing. Nevertheless, I need to insist on the following issue. The context in a region is different. Sometimes it's very tough. But likewise, we've been able to apply certain activities. And what that's right now, what will we be doing in the future? And this takes us to the next subject, which are the perspectives. What perspectives will we be using? The perspectives include working with the association, have a multi-sectorial focus. We need to be prepared to have better advocacy, and we need to improve access to health services, and this is what I wanted to share.
I will have a few comments on the access to treatment in the region, which you all know when you look at the figure of 7% of the people who are estimated to be in need of treatment is the lowest all over the world. Now, as Osama already said, the countries in the region in the recent years have almost all of them made big efforts to establish treatment and care services. There are only two countries, Afghanistan and Iraq, that have not yet, at this point in time, services for people in need of treatment, and Afghanistan is working hard and will have it during this year. Now, they established these services, and now many of them find that not as they hoped many people would come and utilize the services and want to have that treatment. No, it's only quite few who are coming. Now, why is that the case? The main problem is that most people who have HIV in the region don't know that they have it, HIV. There are certainly also some who have it and have reasons why they wouldn't go and utilize services, but this is a very, very small minority. Most of the people just do not know that they are HIV infected and therefore cannot have access to treatment. There is also a possibility, and this is something where we are working also hard with the governments, that the doctors and nurses who might come across people with symptoms of HIV do not really detect it. They do not recognize that might HIV and then ask and offer to these people to have a test so that they then could be enrolled in treatment. So I think a major reason why people, even though there are testing and counseling facilities which are voluntary in most of the countries of the region, they do even not utilize these services, it must have to do with the fact that it's not a real viable option for many to have an HIV test. Viable in terms of if I'm at risk and I know I'm at risk, this is the first thing that has to be the case. I'm not very inclined to go for testing at the services that are available in countries because of stigma, because of fear of being of non-confidentiality, because of fear of certain laws that are in countries that might make my life even worse after I've had the test than before. So these are so many different approaches that we need from so many different ends so that more people will want to know their HIV status, will know it, and then have access to treatment. And we, like UNAIDS and others, UNFPA, are working with governments to, from all these ends, to improve the situation. But it takes time. So I think the joining with you, people living with HIV, with NGOs, and working together to to influence governments to make some policy and political laws, regulations changes also, and to provide services that, as it has been mentioned, that are integrated in the existing services, so that broad access will be possible, is very important. And for this purpose, one activity which is very important needs to happen, and needs to happen more in the countries. Health workers have to undergo awareness raising training in terms of reduction of stigma, of misconceptions that they have. They have this all over the world, but in this region not much has been done yet to change this among the health workers, so that they that integration of HIV services will be possible in reproductive health services, in primary health care, as it is needed. That is as much I want to say at this point.
Merci, Gabriella. Le temps qui nous a été imparti est déjà je crois, est déjà dépassé.
Creo que that the time assigned to us has been expired. I want to thank you, Mr. President, because you let me tell this little comment. I would like to underline a very important issue that has not been debated, which is the problem of the women, people that don't have any voice. The most important thing is to see that the AIDS problem is not a social or medical problem. It's a problem of human rights. Our region does not respect human rights, and even less the rights of women. It's important to reject the mandatory AIDS test in the job, or to deny visas. These are very important elements in the region. I would like to underline this point on the useless and mandatory AIDS test. Thank you for this information. The problem is, I think that we don't have any more time. We have allotted a certain time. Just one more. I work for the world, for the Global Fund, and I want to refer to the question posed by the Lebanese a lady that saying that some people are not eligible for receiving resources of the Global Fund. I think that you should restudy and present again that eligibility conditions, because maybe it was not really studied. The region has a situation which is not as bad as it is presented, even after what the Moroccan representative spoke. All people should be eligible for getting resources from the Global Fund. Is not only beneficing Morocco, there are more countries like Palestine, for example. We are quite happy with the participation of these countries and that the way they have used their resources to make quality interventions. We have to work in different countries, have different and specific conditions. It's difficult to compare cultural and social situations, but I was surprised to see that in Morocco they have started to work with the drug addicts, the work you do for sex workers. For us, this is of great importance. No, I didn't go to Egypt. But I repeat, the situation is not as bad, it's not ideal, because we still have several challenges to overcome, but I remain optimistic. If we work together with the civil society and all the partners, the private sectors, we will arrive to a successful conclusion. Thank you. Therefore, I have to adjourn the session because we have depleted the time. I thank you very much to the panelists and this little question about the support of different categories and the UN Fund for Population and the whole system for this nation. And there's also an approach about the defense of the human rights that will cover all the social categories in every risk situation. And so it's important for improving the legislation, but with the participation of different social actors in order to find an equilibrium and necessary condition to arrive at that change. I'm sorry, we have to adjourn the session. Thank you very much, and the session is adjourned.